On the Powers That Be podcast, we examine the players and currents behind today's most consequential decisions. Join us. Listen to the Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
403 here on the Fan in New York City. Tommy Lugauer, Lugie. It is after hours here on the Fan. 888-808-1019. That is the phone number to call. We have reached the MLB trade deadline day. The deadline is 6 p.m. later on today, which is Monday, and there's already been a lot of moves. The Mets have traded Peralta. They've traded Brazoban. They've traded Minter. The Yankees have traded Duvall. They've traded away Jake Bird and obviously a bunch of other prospects. The Yankees have acquired Luis Garcia. I expect the Yankees to be quite active and Brian Cashman to be quite active over the next 12 hours or so leading up to the deadline. The Yankees certainly need a few more bats. The biggest move in terms of just across baseball, and it came as no surprise to me or shock to me. I know some were, but I wasn't. And that is Tarik Skubal getting traded to the Dodgers. Let me say a few things about that whole situation there. The Dodgers are everything the Yankees used to be and everything the Yankees should be. And that's why when I hear Hal talk about a salary cap, I go, well, hold on a second. You're the Yankees. You know, I know the Dodgers have set the pace here and they add all these star players and they go the extra mile and they're not content with winning two championships in a row. They want to win a third championship in a row. That's the way you guys should be operating. That's the way the Yankees should conduct their business as far as personnel. Everything the Dodgers are doing and have been doing recently is everything the Yankees used to do, and it's everything the Yankees should be doing. It shouldn't be running and hiding behind a salary cap. It should be about matching what the Dodgers are doing or doing it better than the Dodgers do it. The Yankees are still the Yankees as far as firepower, and they have that firepower to match the Dodgers. It's just whether or not they choose to do that. But the Yankees can be what the Dodgers are now because they used to be that, and they still have the manpower, so to speak, to be that. Now, as far as a name that we haven't brought up tonight, but I think it's worth bringing up because he is quite polarizing on this radio station. Certainly polarizing on social media. And that is the name of Juan Soto. And you say, well, why are you bringing up Juan Soto? For all the stars that have ran to Los Angeles, for all the stars that have wanted to join the Dodgers in a quest to win another ring, and the superpower team that is the Dodgers, there was one guy who could have went to the Dodgers, but he chose to go to the Mets. He didn't choose to join Los Angeles. He went with the Mets, and that is Juan Soto. So for all the negative things that people want to say about Juan Soto, and he's this, and he's that, and he's selfish, and he's money hungry, and Juan Soto could have easily taken a boatload of money and went to the Dodgers, but instead, he chose the Mets. He chose to try to dethrone the Dodgers. He tried to beat the Dodgers to go to a team that could knock the Dodgers off. He didn't run to the Dodgers to join them. He carved out and blazed his own path. And I think Juan Soto deserves a lot of credit for doing so. And the other thing here is the Dodgers are not invincible. They're not. In fact, they almost lost last year. The Blue Jays had the Dodgers on the ropes, not once, but twice in the World Series, Game 6 and Game 7. And if not for great play after great play in what was an epic Game 7 in one of the great World Series of all time, the Blue Jays could be the reigning defending champions of baseball. The game is not played on paper. The Dodgers are not unbeatable. They're not invincible. They can be taken down. In fact, if you gave me the choice of Dodgers versus the field this year, I would take the field. So I know everybody wants to cry and be upset. The Dodgers are ruining baseball. They're going to cause a lockout. They're a cheat code. They're ruining the sport. They're going to create a salary cap. There's collusion. All this nonsense. The Dodgers are not invincible. They're not. And any fan in baseball would love their organization to do what the Dodgers are doing. They're not content with what they've done in the past. They always want to add. In the offseason, they went and got Diaz. They went and got Tucker. Now they got in Skubal. But even with all those star players and with all their firepower and thunder, the Dodgers are not invincible. They are beatable. And if you gave me Field versus the Dodgers, I would take the Field. Because, it is very difficult to win three in a row. We saw it with the Chiefs. As great as that Mahomes, Reed, Kelsey, dynasty, oh, they're definitely going to go for three-peat. They're going to win three in a row. Well, they didn't. And I think this is kind of setting up for that, where the Dodgers are going to fall short here. And that's, I look at it as like, hey, forget trying to neuter the Dodgers or create a new CBA that would stop the Dodgers from doing what they're doing. How about you just beat them? How about you just fight fire with fire? Why don't you just play their game or find a way to get around their game and dethrone them? To me, that is much more satisfying for the team that does it, their fan base, and just fans across the board than it is to have a salary cap. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. It is After Hours. It is Tommy Lugauer, Lugie in the late night here on The Fan. Let's go to Norman in Brooklyn. What's up, Norman?
Hi, Tommy. It's the first time I'm calling you.
Appreciate it.
You're welcome. You're having a lot of angst over this Christopher Nolan movie.
Odyssey.
Listen, I go to movies by myself all the time.
You do.
This guy, Nolan, makes depressing movies. The only thing
I wouldn't say depressing. But the movies that I've seen of his, I wouldn't call them depressing. I mean, the Batman movies, I love The Prestige.
Dunkirk.
I loved Inception. Yep. Okay, I'm not saying he hasn't made any depressing movies, but I'm saying the ones that I've liked that I've seen of Nolan, I didn't find myself depressed watching.
Okay, he's best, I think, in a sci-fi fantasy format. I didn't like Dunkirk.
Did you see Odyssey, though, by yourself?
I did not see Odyssey.
Okay, so I think we could look at this as sort of in a vacuum here. If you've seen it, because I've heard some strong takes that the Odyssey movie in IMAX is the greatest movie experience of all time. Now, I've been told that by multiple people.
Is Odyssey a sci-fi movie?
No. It's about post-Trojan War and the Greek mythology.
I'm sorry. I had a brain fart. Yeah, okay. I was thinking, the newest one he made.
The movie that's out now in theaters with Matt Damon and Anne Hathaway.
I read the Odyssey in classics class. I mean, I read Homer's, the Iliad and the Odyssey.
But to me, it's more the crux. And Norman, I think you can help me out with this. For me, whether it's Spider-Man, whether it's Odyssey, whatever, you pick a movie. Going by myself to the movies is a leap that I have not wanted to take in my life. I just never wanted to be, quote unquote, and there's a negative stigma around it, which is probably unfair, but that there is one.
And it is unfair.
For you to be somebody that does it all the time, would you encourage me now to go to the movies by myself?
I'm encouraging you to, but look, I don't think there are any Ten Commandments or Ben-Hur's being put out there. Listen, I don't know. The quality of movies in the last...
everything you hear about this movie, that it's awesome. I'm not going to... I do think that movies have gone downhill slightly, but I still think like the ratings on this movie as far as like a Rotten Tomatoes or the buzz have been...
Think 1 year from now people will want to see this movie again?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, I got to see it, though, too, because I'm just going off of hype. I mean, let me watch it.
Okay.
Because I do think like an Oppenheimer, a Maverick, there's been other movies that have had hype over the last couple of years, but I don't know if they're necessarily watchables. But let me go see it, and I can give you a better answer on that.
Yeah, eat a lot of popcorn and eat crap, because basically that's the excuse I find to go to the movies, is it's a wonderful time to spend, I don't know, $20 for a tub of popcorn.
Yeah, I got to be careful with that stuff. So I had this little bit of like an incident back in the day where I got like a small bucket of popcorn, let's say. And of course, I don't like popcorn. I just like butter. But I just put a ton of butter on it, and I ate the small bucket of popcorn. And then the next time I went to the movie, I was like, wow, you know, that small bucket, I think I'm going to go for a large. And then I went for the large, and I, of course, drowned it in popcorn. And then I went to go see, I think it was one of the Transformer movies. And I got the largest bucket of popcorn they had, which was literally like a bathtub of popcorn. And I mean, I drowned it in butter. And I ate the entire bucket. And I had a stomach ache, I think, for 3.5 years. And I told myself, you know what? You flew too close to the sun on wings of, well, popcorn in this sense. And I wouldn't do it ever again. So since then, I have been basically anti-popcorn at a movie theater. I'm almost anti-snacks. I do like going to the movie theaters where you can like order dinner and like a beer. That's pretty cool. This is back in my movie-going days, like I've told the audience, and if you're just tuning in and you don't know that, I've only been to the movies twice in the last 7 years. Now, part of that is my wife doesn't like going. Another part of that is, well, there was a couple of years there where we basically couldn't go to the movie theaters, and there really hasn't been a movie out there that has sparked my interest and has had the hype and buzz like Odyssey has had. Even an Oppenheimer, like I said, or one of these Avatar movies, or Dune, or Maverick, you know, certain ones where I'm like, ooh, okay, that's getting a lot of publicity, a lot of buzz. To me, Odyssey has really gone to that next level where I'm like, okay, I might take the plunge and go see this in IMAX, but more importantly, go see it by myself. Because there is a negative, I mean, you know. But you learn a couple things when you're married. Number one, alone time, not the worst. And number two, you just do things differently when you're, I think the fact that, and also too, if somebody happened to notice me there, which is possible, they could say, well, listen, Loogie works late nights. His wife's probably at her job. That's why he's at the movies by himself. Because yes, there is a negative stigma around going to the movies alone. But maybe that's a stigma that existed more back in the day, and we're in like a new modern age where people do go by themselves. I just never have. And I've always been very much, I'll be honest, making fun of people that do it. And it doesn't help when, you know, I love the guy, but it doesn't help when Evan goes to the movies by himself. Does that help the person that goes to the movies by themselves to have Evan in the category with them? Probably not. But I got to do it. I got to do it only because, you know what? Maybe it's one of those things where you, until you try it, you don't know. So Cam Scadaboo had something to say over the weekend that I want to get into a little bit later that caught my ear. And then obviously the trade deadline, which is at 6 p.m. Eastern. And I expect a lot of moves today. And we've already gotten, Peralta to the Rays. And I'll say this about Freddie Peralta. I don't think it was a New York thing. I really don't. I mean, Sonny Gray clearly couldn't handle New York. He was really good before the Yankees. He's been really good since, including what he's doing with the Red Sox now. When it comes to Peralta, I don't think it was a New York thing. And I know it's open season on the Mets and everybody wants to make fun of them, including our president, including Bob Costas, anybody that really steps in front of a microphone. They want to besmirch the Mets. I don't think it's the Mets ruin Freddie or they ruin Peterson. I'm not buying in any of that either. I just think it's one of those things that you can't explain. Look, if we go back in time, in history, which isn't that long ago, I'll speak for myself, but I know that I wasn't the only one that had this opinion. I loved the trade. And I wasn't worried about the prospects the Mets gave up. You got to give up prospects to get a quality player back. And Freddie Peralta, prime of his career, coming off of the best season of his life, led the National League in wins, all-star, the whole deal. I figured he would step right in, sort of with McClain at the top of this rotation, and be really good. So I was willing to part with prospects for that. Always. Prospects are prospects. They're like a girl's phone number. Great, I went to the bar and I got 3 girls' phone numbers. Well, that means nothing unless you can close on the deal. They're just numbers. They're just digits on a piece of paper. Same with draft picks, prospects, all that stuff. But I don't think it was a New York thing. Freddie Peralta, to me, after these games, in these press conferences, his body language, he never struck me as a guy that didn't want to be here or this was too big of a city for him in the moment and all that. I didn't get that feeling. And at the time when he was traded here, there's risk because he wasn't signed long-term, but I was open at the time to a long-term agreement with Peralta. If he had a good year and everything went well, absolutely, I was definitely open to that. And I've always been a Peralta fan. And for whatever reason, it just didn't work out here. And you were able to get three prospects, and we'll see the way it shakes up as far as their... I know we know their rankings now, but let's see end of the year if they reshuffle the rankings and... You know, the 20th ranked prospect could end up being a great player. I don't know that. You don't know that. So you hope that you trust Stearns here to identify the players that he wants, whether it's the Brazoban trade, whether it's the Peralta trade, Minter, Raley's going to get dealt. So all the guys he moves here, you know, in the next couple hours, this is where you put your faith in. I know a lot of people don't want to do this, but you have no choice, really. You put your faith in David Stearns to get the best return possible. Even if maybe on paper it doesn't sound like the best return. But Peralta was the right move. I'll do that every day and twice on Sunday before I pay Dylan Cease the type of contract he got. And I know Dylan Cease, we all do. He's had a big year. He was the starter in the All-Star game for the American League. But that contract is brutal. Too many years, too much money. And I don't think the lack of the Mets offering, they were going to do it for Yamamoto. Let me just say it this way. The Mets are going to be all in on Skubal, I believe. And I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that Skubal sticks around with the Dodgers. Certainly, they are a stiff competition when it comes to signing free agents, especially a guy that's going to be on their team for the next couple months. But I believe the Mets will be heard from when it comes to Skubal. And I envision and dream, and this is why I wouldn't trade Clay Holmes, I envision and dream of a rotation that is McLain, Skubal, Scott, Thornton, Holmes. And now this, when you talk about the entire pitching staff, I look at this bullpen and I see a lot of guys being moved. Like Brazoban was maybe 50-50 to get dealt, considering he's under a contract for a few more years. Minter, you knew he'd be gone. Raley, you knew he'd be gone. And Weaver, similar to Brazoban, it could go either way. And as a sports talk radio host, I've kind of gone back and forth on whether it's the right thing to do, whether it's not the right thing to do. As far as a Met fan, which I am, I would probably be happy, or not probably, I would be happy either way. Because they're getting a return for a guy that, you know how relievers are year in and year out, you never know. So you're getting something back and you're trading him at his highest of value. And then on the flip side, so I'd be happy with that. But then on the flip side, I'd be happy because you know what? You're keeping a guy that has pitched extraordinary this year, has now shown us in multiple stops in New York that he can handle it. He can pitch at the highest of levels, back end of the game, eighth, ninth inning, whatever the case may be. And I can pencil Weaver in next year as a high leverage guy. Out of the bullpen, hopefully for Alex Cora. But I don't, and by no means I think the Mets have to, you have to sell off all these guys, you got to trade this player. I've never been of that feeling with this team. A couple of guys made sense, and so far those guys, two of those guys got traded. Brazoban, they definitely could have kept, but they chose to move on. Which tells me that they probably liked their return a lot that they got on him. Peralta was, the writing was on the wall. Minter, the writing was on the wall. Based on everything I'm reading and hearing, it doesn't sound like Bo Bichette's going anywhere, which I'd like to think that Bo has told the Mets, hey, I'm going to stick around. I'm going to opt in. And listen, I don't know where Bo Bichette is getting the type of money that the Mets are paying him in the offseason. So unless he's completely and utterly anti-New York and doesn't want to be here, which again, same thing, I've seen nothing from Bo Bichette that would lead me to believe that, or heard anything from Bo Bichette that would lead me to believe that. You know, when guys are unhappy and they don't want to be somewhere and if they're miserable, they're not a New York guy, it comes out. Especially in a year like the Mets are having, it would come out, and it hasn't. So I don't think it's anything like that with Bo. I just think it's more, okay, what does he think his value could be on, you know, what type of deals he looking for? And but if he is planning on opting in and he's told the Mets that, then absolutely you stay put. If he has gone to them and said, I'm not sticking around, then obviously trade him. I mean, that's a no-brainer. So based on the fact that, and we'll find out here by 6 p.m., but based on that, if he ends up sticking around, then I would imagine the Mets are keeping him, and he wants to stay here. By the way, I'm watching Baker Mayfield on the TV right now, and I heard Sean and Tiki on Friday about the Jets trading for Baker Mayfield. And we'll get more into the football as the baseball trade deadline goes away. I do have one little Cam Scataboot note that I want to get into before we sign off here at 5 a.m. And it's funny because I've whether you're a host, content creator, just a fan, caller, and I even talked to a Jet fan or two over the weekend, you know, just people in my life, and they too are going through the damn turnstile here of positivity for this year. I can absolutely buy, sell, whatever the case may be, Jet positivity for 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the line. I have no earthly idea how you could be positive about the Jets going into the season. In fact, I think it's more likely that Aaron Glenn is fired by week 6 than it is the Jets win 6 games. I mean, the Jets literally hired Aaron Glenn's replacement for the midway point of the season in Frank Reich. They literally hired a guy that could step right in and be the head coach, a guy with head coaching experience. You could talk to me all you want about the offensive line and the draft the Jets had and a defense that, in theory, I mean, how could it be any worse? A defense that could be better here. You can give me all that stuff. The NFL is about quarterback, coach. So you have Geno Smith and Aaron Glenn. That is not cause for optimism. The optimism, to me, is, yes, O-line, yes, skill position players you like, but it's about the next quarterback and finding Mr. Right and then the head coach. I don't know if Gio's listening, but if he is, your head coach is on thin ice out there in Minnesota, so maybe he could be a name we think about coming up because he basically wrote his resignation when they got rid of Sam. And I'm sorry, Kyler Murray is not the answer. No. I don't think Aaron Glenn's getting through the year. I don't. But I can't believe the optimism. I get it. The Jets have won 12 Super Bowls in the month of July. I do understand that. And I'm about positivity, you know that. So I don't want to necessarily like deter positivity. If I'm not buying into the positivity, and I want to be, look, I've created that plan for the Jets, that 5-year plan for them, and I feel strongly about it. I think the quarterback class next year in the draft is excellent, and if the Jets can lose enough, which that shouldn't be too difficult, they will be able to get their hands on one of those quarterbacks. And like I said, they're going to be in the, and look, maybe Frank Reich's their coach, but I don't see a path to Glenn surviving the year. And that early schedule, the Jets could be looking up at 0-4. It's a coach quarterback league, and they are, I believe, very weak at both of those spots. Or head coach, I should say. But I mean, coaching in general, but it's a coaching in general, but specifically, you know, you want to be strong at head coach. And like I say, when you, and I know Frank Reich brings a lot to the table also, but I think you've in the back of your mind, you're hiring him knowing, hey, if we got to make a coaching change, we could slide Frank in there. Because we've seen with an old brick, and it doesn't work when you put in a guy in there that has no experience. Frank certainly has that. Or last year with the Giants, it was just a mess. It sometimes could get worse if you fired the coach. But I think in this instance, you would be upgrading. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. It is After Hours. It is Tommy Lugauer. It is Lugie in the late night. We'll continue to take your call. So another segment or two to go here. If you want to get in on the trade deadline, you can right now at 888-808-1019. It is Tommy Lugauer here on The Fan.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
4:33 here on The Fan in New York City. Tommy Lugauer, Lugie. It is after hours here on The Fan. 888-808-1019 as we are 12 hours or so away from the trade deadline being a thing of the past. And the Yankees certainly made a pretty big splash on Sunday. And that is part of the fan focus. Luis Garcia, who, look, I wouldn't get hung up on the fit. It's not a great fit, but he is the best available bat, or certainly the best available bat that we know of. I mean, another name could emerge, and obviously the Yankees are going to grab another bat or two, maybe even three, before 6 p.m. later on tonight. But Garcia is on a heater. He's having a career year. He can play first base. He can be a DH. He can be kind of a insurance if Stanton doesn't come back. Judge, I do think, will ultimately suit up again. Stanton, I'm less optimistic about. But things you like about Garcia: high average, doesn't strike out, so you get the power numbers, which have been an outlier this year. It is a career year, but you hope that continues over the next couple months. And you have him for next year as well. But Garcia doesn't strike out, hits for high average, makes contact. And I know people thought or jumped to a conclusion, and I've even thrown this out there in the offseason and throughout this year. Well, Ben Rice, why don't you just move him to catcher? You know, the catching situation is abysmal. Some of the top names that were out there in the catcher market are either a Langoliers, a Shea Langoliers from the Athletics. He's out for the year now. Hunter Goodman, probably not getting moved by the Rockies. Jeffers, Ryan Jeffers is probably not getting moved by the Twins. Rushman, yeah, there's talks with the Yankees and Baltimore, but you figure Baltimore's going to tax the Yankees because it's a trade within the division. So the catcher market is thinning out. So, hey, you have Ben Rice, he can play catcher. Why not move him there? Well, Jack Curry yesterday essentially poured cold water on it. And I understand it. Even though I've thrown it out there, I do get why you wouldn't want to put Ben Rice a catcher. I mean, first and foremost, you don't want him to get hurt. You already have injuries to Judge and Stanton and Bellinger. The last thing you want is Rice on the shelf because you had him behind the plate. It's just not worth it. You still have an opportunity here, and I do think ultimately the Yankees will trade for a professional at the catcher position. What I would not do also with Garcia is, because now it's like, all right, where do you make it fit? You know, you're just going to do what he does, and that's play him at first, DH him. And Goldschmidt, I still think, will get at-bats because he still has value, especially against lefties. And defensively, he's really good. Garcia crushes right-handed pitching. He doesn't help you with your left-handed pitching as far as beating those guys up because the Yankees need right-handed bats. Or a guy that, I should say, because Garcia switched, but he can help you even more against righties, but can't help you against lefties. I would not move Garcia to second base because he sucks defensively. What I would do, if it presents itself, is move Jazz to third base in order to get Luis Arraez here to play second base, because another guy that is high contact, high average, doesn't strike out, so that makes a whole lot of sense to do. And the other name that I've thrown out there a bunch, and this is good, I would say it's a long shot, but if the Blue Jays are willing to do business with the Yankees and George Springer, who I believe has a no trade, but if Springer's willing to come here, George Springer makes a ton of sense for the Yankees. And not necessarily a fit-wise, same thing. You got a lot of guys that are DHs out of position, but you know what? The Yankees need offense. They need bats. And because you went into the year essentially without a third baseman, without a catcher, your shortstop platoon is a mess. Dominguez is a DH. Stanton's a DH. Rice is a DH. You've already kind of presented this problem. You're not going to be able to fix it overnight. The Yankees can't do anything to fix it. They just have to add position players that can hit. That's all they have to worry about now for the next 12 hours. Not, well, where's this guy going to play? What are we going to do here? Look, they're too far down the path here to fix that part of it. And that does fall at the feet of Brian Cashman, who has assembled this team probably not in the best way. And it has now kind of put the Yankees in a position where you trade for Luis Garcia and you love the move from an offensive perspective as far as what he can do at the plate. But he also is a guy that is very similar to Rice from the perspective of DH first base. And you already have Goldschmidt at first base. You have a million DHs. But you know what? If you can get your hands on a great offensive player, and right now Garcia is great. You know, throughout his career, he hasn't been great, but he's still only 26 years old and could be, you know, ascending. This might not just be a career year. This might be the start of a prime for him. But whether it's a rise, whether it's Springer, whether it's Garcia here that they got, Brian Cashman needs to add bats and he needs to bring in impact bats. And you don't worry about the fit as much as you worry about the production. And the production is there with Garcia. Now, there's always the, can he handle New York? Can he handle the postseason? Can he handle the bright lights? Well, you won't know till you know. You got to find out. There's no indication one way or the other that he can't. But right now, Garcia comes into this lineup and he's the second best player on the team. And when I saw this news, it made me think, all right, Stanton is probably not coming back. And I'm sure the Yankees are completely fed up with Stanton's act. How could you not be? The guy has been out since the Knicks played the Hawks in the first round. The parade was already a month and a half ago. That's how long Giancarlo Stanton's been out of the lineup. And there's no timetable for his return. In fact, Aaron Boone doesn't even want to take questions about it anymore. He went from reasonable amount of time. This is the Aaron Boone timetable. He went on Talking Yanks, the John Boy podcast, and he said, Stanton will be back in a reasonable amount of time. The following day, Aaron Boone told reporters, there is no timetable for Stanton's return. And then just, last week, Aaron Boone said, stop asking. Let's play this out as if you're a married man with your wife. Let's play this out. So let's say you go out on a Saturday night with the boys. Going to the city, steak dinner, you hit the club, then you hit another type of club in the after hours, if you catch my drift. And you don't clue your wife into all the details, but she knows you're going out with the boys on a Saturday night. And you, like an idiot, around 11 o'clock at night, you pull an ET and you phone home. And you tell her, look, honey, I should be back at a reasonable amount of time. She goes, okay. You got kids, but she's like, all right, I put the kids to bed, but like a good wife, I'm going to stay up and wait for your arrival. And again, the first mistake you made was pulling an ET and phoning home. You shouldn't have. You should have just probably texted her and said, hey, honey, don't wait up. But you put it out there, you're going to be back at a reasonable amount of time, and you set it at 11 p.m. at night. Fast forward 2 hours later. You're out. Clearly loud noise in the background. There's music. You're not at the library, okay? Nor are you on the train on the way home. And at this point, you say, hey, honey, there's no timetable for my return. Okay? So you went from reasonable amount of time I'll be home to no timetable. That's at 2 a.m. Now you call her at 5 a.m. or she calls you and she's pissed, wants to know where you are, and you say, stop asking. How is that going to go over? You're going to be locked out of your house and your stuff's going to be on the front lawn. But that's what Aaron Boone is telling us. So Aaron Boone's the guy out on a Saturday night that continues to dig the hole deeper and deeper. Yeah, honey, I'll be back in a reasonable amount of time. There's no timetable for my return. To, stop asking. Well, you're the one that went on a podcast, Aaron, and said that Stan's going to be back in a reasonable amount of time. What is a reasonable? He's already been out for 3 months. It just doesn't feel like Stanton is coming back. In fact, it feels like Giancarlo Stanton's days as a Yankee are numbered. We have maybe seen the last of Stanton. Like this addition of Garcia, the fact that Aaron Boone doesn't want to answer questions about Stanton's return. And I got to imagine the Yankees are just completely fed up and done with Stanton as far as the injuries and the summer vacations and the summer sabbaticals. Garcia's under contract for another year. He's got a ton of power. He can DH. It just feels to me that his time with the Yankees is done. The Yankees are looking to move on, and Garcia is that replacement for Stanton for the next year and a half. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. It is After Hours. It is Tommy Lugauer, Lugie in the late night here on The Fan. We will take your calls in the final segment, plus a little note on Cam Scataboo and something he said over the weekend that caught my ear. The phone number to join the conversation is as followed, 888-808-1019. It is Tommy Lugauer, Lugie in the late night here on The Fan.
I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
450 here on The Fan in New York City. Tommy Lugauer, Lugie. It is After Hours, the final segment of After Hours for this evening. And hopefully everybody had a pleasant Lugie evening. We'll hand it off to Al and CeeLo in the warm-up show coming your way at 5 a.m. So Cam Scataboo admitted over the weekend that John Harbaugh did have a little chit-chat with him about Cam Scataboo and, you know, the backflip that he couldn't stick the landing on at Fanatics Fest. And obviously a lot was made of that, and a lot was made of Scat at Monday Night Raw right after he got injured in the fall. And look, I didn't think it was a big deal that Scataboo was in a wrestling angle, segment, storyline, whatever you want to call it. I didn't think it was a big deal that he did a backflip. I mean, I agreed with Harbaugh, like, if you're going to do it, stick the landing. I just think Cam Scataboo is wired in a way that he's going to just do what he does. He's going to run until the wheels fall off. And I mean this in the best way possible. I mean, the guy's a maniac. But that's why we love him. That's why he's such a fan favorite. And whether it's his running style or the way he conducts himself off the field, and a lot of that stuff is kind of endearing. You know, he's like your fraternity brother that everybody loves. But it's like sometimes he had a few too many and he falls over in the lawn. But I mean, you appreciate that. You know, it's Cam being Cam. It's Scat being Scat. And I don't think you're ever really going to take that away from his personality. I don't think we've seen the last of the backflips. And all of that stuff, the energy, the backflips, the power running style, that's what got us so excited about the Giants last year. I think back to that Eagle game on Thursday Night Football, where Philly in the fourth quarter quit. They waved the white flag. They didn't want any more of what the Giants were bringing. And, you know, after the game, Scataboo's ripping his shirt off, and Jackson Dart ripped his shirt off, and you had dancing and backflips and the eye black kind of crazy painted all over their faces. And for a fleeting moment in time, the Giants turned into the Savannah Bananas in the best way possible. And that was kind of taken away from them once Scataboo had that gruesome injury. And you saw it on Dart's face, and kind of the season fell apart from there. Remember, that game against the Broncos, we as Giant fans felt like football fans again. We got to talk trash on social media. We got to anticipate a game. Everybody was hyped up for it. And it felt like we were back to being fans of an NFL team again. And that energy that Scat and Dart brought to the offense was much needed on that side of the ball. And when it comes to, because I've heard this too also with Dart, you know, well, he's doing too much off the field. Okay. You know, geez. I mean, he's a good-looking guy. He's got a hot blonde, a girlfriend. I mean, what do you want him to do? Sit at home? Go to the movies by himself like I'm going to do? I really now we're gonna tell a good looking quarterback. I want my good looking quarterbacks dating hot girls and going out. What do I want them to do? Sitting at home eating a PBJ with the crust cut off on a Friday night? That works for Eli Manning, but it doesn't have to work for every quarterback. With the hype train that comes with the Giants, you're also going to have a lot of people looking to sort of tear them down as well. It kind of goes with it, but I just think Scadaboo and Dart are going to do their thing, for better or worse. And I appreciate Harbaugh chatting with Scat, and I appreciate Scat for admitting it and listening, but I just think these guys are going to operate the way they operate, for better or worse. And what they did on the field last year when they were healthy and they were out there was for the better. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. Let's go to Pat in the Bronx. He joins us. What's up, Pat?
Hey, Tommy. Great show.
Thanks.
My prediction, Dodgers-Yankees. Don't ask me why. Dodgers-Yankees World Series. Winner up in the air, like you said. Take the field against the Dodgers.
I would.
We used to call people who would follow, you know, one direction, a flock. Now we call them a herd. And it seems to me that this agreement that's coming up in December is going to be led by public opinion and social media.
Definitely.
And won't be led by factual information.
Well, yeah, and that's part of the, you know, people that kind of have that tinfoil hat on now with that believe in the collusion, and that's why Scuba went to the Dodgers. They feel like the owners are colluding for the Dodgers to load up, win another championship, so that in the court of public opinion, the fans will be on the side of the owners for a salary cap.
Well, I mean, it's a conclusion that one can draw, but I mean, then you're going to draw a million conspiracy theories. Mm-hmm. So I prefer to just let people play baseball. I've gone to more games at Citi Field in the last half dozen years than I have in my lifetime. So, you know, it's a beautiful park. It's a great place to see a ball game.
Definitely.
But when it becomes a ghost town, Tommy, it is not fun.
Yeah, look, and that's really for any stadium. But I hear you. I still think there's going to be a lot of people that show up in these next couple of months because of the young players, and then there's still going to be that optimism for the future there. And look, the crowds were pretty good this weekend, and I expect them to be pretty good going forward. And look, I mean, it's a way to get out, go to the park. So I don't think it's going to necessarily be a ghost town at any point in the next couple of months. But I understand what you're saying.
Let me know how going to the movies by yourself works, because I have trouble with that myself, but maybe I'll try it.
Yeah, it's not so, you know, and I appreciate the call, Pat. I will let the audience know, and it's not a given. I've always been anti going to the movies by myself. There is a negative stigma attached to it, but I've reached a point in my life where I realize my wife doesn't want to go to the movie theater with me. And that's fine. She just doesn't like movies. And I'm not going to drag her there. I've already done that a bunch, and it just never goes well. So I don't want to do that. And I also don't want to, you know, what am I going to ask? Lopresti? He's busy with whatever he's busy with. So I got friends that they're always, they don't have enough. These are my friends. They got no time. Like, I'll go to JJ. You want to go to the movies? Nah, I can't. Really? I have no time. Okay, but yet he'll sit on the couch on a Sunday watching football for 12 straight hours. So you had the time there, and you went golfing for 7 rounds, or 7 hours, I should say, but you don't have 3 hours to go to the movies. It's priorities. That's what it is. And kids are used as excuses when it's convenient to the parents. There, I said it. Well, my children are a problem. Really? That's okay. Got it. You don't have. Meanwhile, these are the same people that have their, you know, in-laws live across the street and are basically babysitters whenever they need them. You don't want to go to the movies with me. That's fine. So I'm at a fork in the road. I'm in a conundrum in my life where I'm either going to never go to the movie theater ever again, or I'm going to have to go by myself. And with Odyssey, is it Odyssey or The Odyssey? The? There's a The in front of it? They made a book out of that? All right, so The Odyssey, is with The Odyssey getting all this attention and acclaim. And somebody called me last week and said, Odyssey or The Odyssey in IMAX. So if you go to see it in an IMAX theater, this fellow who called me last week said it's the greatest movie experience of his lifetime. Greatest movie experience of his lifetime. Now, that's certainly a lot of hype to live up to, and we'll see if it ends up being that case, because come hell or high water, I'm going to go see it. But with all the buzz around this movie, this is the first one ever since I've really been in this part of my life where I might go by myself that I've decided, hey, I think I'm going to take the plunge to go to the movies by myself. But it has a negative stigma. Now, not that anybody, I'm not, you know, you're 40-something years old, you go to the movies by yourself, I mean, you know. That's why I think about maybe starting a business where, you know, I was, originally I was like, oh, maybe I'll be a sports talk radio gigolo or escort, maybe I'll be like a movie escort or a movie gigolo where, you know, now I can go to, you know, you pay to come go to the movies with me, and now I don't have to go by myself, you don't have to go by yourself. It would be a total just, hey, hi and bye. We're not going to talk or anything like that, but we're just going to go to the movies together. So instead of the sports talk radio gigolo that goes to the games, which is something I was thinking about a couple months ago, now I could be sort of the escort that goes to the movies with somebody. And we watch the movie. I don't have to go by myself. You don't have to go by yourself. And we go see The Odyssey or Spider-Man. I like Spider-Man. Sorry, I didn't mean to quote a movie right before Al. But it's not a Will Ferrell movie. Don't worry, Al. Although there are loose connections to Will Ferrell with the characters in that movie. Right now, CeeLo, I hope, is laughing at that. You know, I dropped a knocked-up line on Richard in Manhattan the other day, and he had no idea what movie I was talking about. But, you know, I don't think knocked-up is necessarily in the Richard in Manhattan wheelhouse. All right, that's enough out of me. My thanks to the callers. My thanks to the listeners. Appreciate it from Fliegelman. Alan CeeLo come your way next with the warm-up show. It is the baseball trade deadline, so a very busy day here on WFAN. Keep it locked for, is it Jerry and Gio coming up at 6? I don't know. Everyone's off. So just keep it locked in all day. I'll be back after the Yankees. I know that. See ya.
Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.